This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a diabetes problem. That is an indisputable fact. Sugary drinks don't help, and there's evidence that cutting out those sugar-larded beverages is a great first step to a healthier lifestyle. This is a message that health officials across the United States, mainly through cities, are trying to promote, but they are running into interference from well-funded campaigns by big beverage producers. Marion Nussel, a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University, has written about it, and her book is Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda. Marion, welcome to The Source.
Glad to be here.
What's at stake here? What is the big issue?
With sodas?
With this whole fight. You know, we have public health agencies trying to get people to cut back on sodas, and we have soda companies who are saying they want to protect their industry.
Oh, well, those are the stakes. It's public health versus corporate profits. It's really not any more complicated than that. When we look at what's been happening with sales of sodas in the United States lately, sales are way down. They've gone down by 20 to 25% over the last 10 years, which is why I subtitled my book, And Winning, because the soda industry thinks that this is a result of health advocacy, and I'm certainly not going to argue with them.
But as we've seen the sales of sodas drop, we're not seeing obesity rates drop.
Oh, yes, we are. Obesity rates in most sectors of the population are leveling off. They're leveling off in kids. There's been a real change, and that change has occurred in parallel with what's happening with soda sales. Soda are responsible for roughly a third to a half, or sugary drinks in general are responsible for half of the sugars in American diets. And if people are eating less sugar, which they are, then you would expect that calories would be going down and obesity wouldn't be as much of a problem, and it's really only increasing in very small sectors of the population.
So when you say that 20 to 25% reduction in soda consumption across the United States, is that uniform or is that just in certain demographics?
Oh, no, it's certainly in certain demographics. Soda consumption is class-based. Income, education, social class, in some cases minority status, and soda sales closely track cigarette sales so that the sectors of the population who are still smoking are the ones that are drinking the most soda.
Is there evidence that these public awareness campaigns have an effect on reducing soda consumption?
Oh, well, soda consumption is down. That's the evidence.
We have linkage.
If you ask people why they're not drinking sodas, they tell you because they know that sugars are bad for them. And they've heard that. That word is out.
Okay. And so what is Big Soda doing to counter that?
Well, it's dealing with it in several different ways. And, you know, I think of the large soda companies as being kind of schizophrenic. On the one hand, they have a public face that is arguing very strongly that they want to be part of the solution to the obesity problem. They're producing all these products that have less sugar and are healthier. And on the other hand, they're working behind the scenes to do everything that they can to protect sales of their products and to prevent the government from intervening, to prevent health advocates from putting taxes on sodas or setting caps on sizes. They've done everything they can to keep vending machines in schools and to protect their right to market to children in practically every way except directly on television.
What are some of the tactics? How do they have so much power?
Oh, they have a lot of money. A lot of people drink soda. I mean, these are companies that make billions of dollars a year in sales and profits and are willing to spend it in marketing in many different ways. Over the summer, the New York Times, for example, had a very, very large article, an investigative report on Coca-Cola's sponsorship of something called the Global Energy Balance Network, which is a group, a new organization formed by some scientists at universities who formed this organization to argue that exercise and physical activity are much more efficient and better ways to maintain healthy weight than eating less of things that aren't good for you, like drinking sodas. And, of course, this thing was sponsored by Coca-Cola, and that came as a big shock to a lot of people. And I know that because I talked to a lot of reporters after the article came out. And unless they were business reporters, they were totally shocked, first of all, that Coca-Cola would fund something like this, and then that there would be investigators at universities who would take the money.
So the big soda is trying to reframe the debate, shifting focus away from the connection between obesity and the consumption of calories and chronic diseases. And they want it to become about personal responsibility and exercise.
That's right. And also, you know, they deflect attention from the calories in part of the body weight equation and focus it on calories out, even though you know that if you are overeating to the point where you're gaining weight, it's going to be very, very difficult to work off those calories by physical activity. My rule of thumb is it's about a mile to work off, a mile of walking or running to work off every 100 calories. And if you're overeating, you know, you have a 20-ounce soda, that's 3 miles of walking or running.
That's a long way to go for one soda.
You would think.
And do people know that? Is that being communicated to the average consumer?
Well, I think some people do and some people don't. The big surprise, I think, to most people is how much sugar there is in sodas. It's roughly a teaspoon per ounce. So if you have a 20-ounce soda, it's not going to be 20 teaspoons, but it will certainly be 16 or 17 in that. And so that means that if you were sitting there with a big 20-ounce glass of water, you would be spooning 17 teaspoons of sugar into that. That's hidden by the flavors, the acidity, and the bubbles, and people have no idea. So that's another shock, is just how sugary it is. And all the calories are from sugar. There's no nutritional value otherwise. And if it's one thing Americans don't need more of, it's more calories.
All right, we're talking about the sugar consumption in big soda. Marion Nestle is the author of the book Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda and Winning. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. What do you think about San Antonio's diabetes problem and the effort to try to get the message out that we should reduce our consumption? You think there's a problem here? 210-614-8980. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about San Antonio's love-hate affair with sugary drinks. We know that it increases the diabetes rate. What can we do to try to get people to break the habit of drinking so much so these large sugary drinks? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. With me is Marion Nestle. She's a professor in nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. Her book is Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda and Winning. Let's get a caller on the air. Jeff is on the line. And hi, Jeff. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I just had a question about diet sodas and the nutritional impact of diet sodas. Even though they say there are no calories, it seems like those may be damaging in some way.
Thanks for that great call, Jeff. Appreciate it. Marion.
Yeah, they have no calories and they have no sugars. What they have is artificial sweeteners. And there's some evidence, it's very preliminary and I don't want to make too big a deal of it, that the artificial sweeteners fool the body into thinking that sugar is there and it raises insulin levels and so forth. I'm not completely convinced by that, but what is absolutely clear is that diet sodas do not help people maintain or lose weight. And that you can see by looking at across the population. Maybe some individuals can do it, but if you look across the population, the use of artificial sweeteners rose exactly in parallel with the rising prevalence of obesity. In fact, that's a very good example of how association does not prove causation in epidemiologic studies. It's one of my favorite examples. I don't think that diet sodas cause obesity, but they certainly don't do anything to make it better. People can so easily compensate for the missing calories. I don't particularly like the way artificial sweeteners taste, so diet sodas are off my radar completely. I don't drink them. I don't like the way they taste. And I don't recommend them because I don't think they do anybody any good.
And what about some of the research that says that the diet sodas and artificial sweeteners may disrupt the microbiome that people have and that may cause obesity?
Yeah, that's a really interesting hypothesis. And I'm waiting to see it tested more extensively. The microbiome studies are very, very exciting right now and were made possible through DNA testing. And once that testing started, it became possible to start looking at the bacteria in the large intestine and developing all kinds of hypotheses about it. But I'm waiting for more research on that one.
Now, Mexico has tried to take on big soda. They passed a soda tax, national soda tax. How has that worked out?
Well, it worked out very well from the standpoint of health advocates. Soda sales are down in Mexico, and the price differential has been, in fact, passed along to consumers with the expected effect, which is, I think, soda sales are down by 6 to 10%, somewhere in that range. And you know that the tax is working because the soda lobbies have really gone to work, and they have just convinced the Mexican government to cut the tax in half.
So the big soda is coming back, and they're trying to, get this tax reduced.
Well, the first thing they did was to lower the price in rural areas. Sodas are very deeply entrenched in Mexican culture, and there's a long history about why that happened. And so that was the first thing, was to keep people in rural areas from cutting out some of their drinking. They reduced the price. But then now the price is being passed on, sales are down, and they're doing everything they can to get the tax rescinded. And absent being able to get it rescinded, they've gotten it cut in half.
So cities in the United States have tried to put on a soda tax: Philadelphia, San Francisco, Berkeley. Some have failed, others not so.
Well, only one has won, and that's the Berkeley soda tax. And what Berkeley learned from previous soda tax initiatives, the California situation is complicated because California has a law that says that if you put a tax initiative that uses the money for a specific purpose, that tax must be passed by 67% of the electorate. And that's hard to do in America. That's 67% is really a lot. In Berkeley, and so in the cities in California like Richmond and El Monte, they chose to have two separate initiatives, one for the tax and one for how the tax would be spent, with the idea that the tax would be spent for child health purposes or some other social purposes. People don't mind taxing sodas if the money is going to be used for something useful. In El Monte and in Richmond, the taxes were defeated by around 67%, but the bill that said where the money would go was passed by the same percentage, but it didn't do any good because the tax failed. Berkeley elected to have one bill, just one bill, and to try to pass it with a 67% vote, and they succeeded brilliantly. They passed it with a 75% vote.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We're speaking with Marion Nussel. She's the author of the book Big Soda, Taking on Big Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda and Winning. She argues that sugary beverage companies are using a number of tactics to deflect criticism and mislead consumers so they can keep selling their product. And they're also trying to stymie public health initiatives to raise awareness about the cost of drinking so much Big Soda. So you say that is a common tactic for these companies to try to get on the commissions or committees that cities put together to deal with these health awarenesses campaigns?
I think they would if they could. I'm not aware of very many cities where that's happened. San Antonio may be unique in that. What they usually do is to come in and promise the city a very large gift. We'll fund your parks. That's what they did in New York City when Mayor Bloomberg was trying to set a cap on sodas. They offered the city an enormous gift to the parks or something like that, and the city didn't take it. But in the classic cases, Philadelphia, which was planning a tax, and the soda industry came in and promised to give $10 million to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and somehow the tax initiative went away. It just disappeared. And I suppose it's lovely for the hospital.
Well, in San Antonio in 2013, there was the formation of a working group to try to develop a public campaign to lower consumption of these drinks. And the working group consisted of Metro Health, the American Heart Association, Methodist Health Foundation, Interlex Communications, and Salud America. And then later, they were a public affairs communications person from a Coca-Cola company was able to join the group and took part in trying to design the campaign, and then nothing really came of that.
Well, that would be one very effective way of doing that, wouldn't it? I mean, what amazes me about all of this, and in doing the research for the book, what really surprised me more than anything else was the comprehensiveness of the soda industry's involvement in these very small city initiatives. I mean, there's just no city that's too small to have attention if it's likely to do something that's going to hurt soda sales. And I found that quite astonishing. One of the results of the New York Times article was that the soda industry, which is extraordinarily embarrassed, or Coca-Cola was extraordinarily embarrassed by that article, and its CEO said that they would try to be more transparent about the kind of funding that they were doing of researchers and of community groups. And indeed, they printed on their website, Coca-Cola.com, they have a transparency page in which they list all of the community organizations and all of the individuals that they fund. And it's an astonishing list. It is so long, you just cannot believe how long it is. It goes on and on and on. And there have been several analyses of the list that have been done so far, and they show that a substantial number of the organizations that are funded are health organizations. A substantial number are minority, African American or Hispanic organizations. Many of them are exercise, promote physical activity. And you can see that they're strategically placed.
So,
and if they do nothing else, they buy silence.
Well, there was speculation. We had the director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health Department. He was fired, Dr. Thomas Schlenker. And the public reason for that was for unprofessional comments that he made towards women. But then there is the speculation that's been out there that it was due to other reasons, maybe having to do with his criticism of big soda consumption in San Antonio. And I understand that you're aware of this episode, right?
Yes, I'm only familiar with what I've read in the press about it. It certainly looked as if he was fired because he was interfering with getting a big gift from Coca-Cola or the American Beverage Association or whoever it was. It certainly gave the appearance of that kind of conflict. But it's hard to know without knowing much more about the details of what his behavior was, which I didn't really see very much in the way of, I didn't see very many details about that.
Sure, but it might be noted that the Texas Workforce Commission reviewed these circumstances and dismissed, and they said that they sided with him, and they found that he was fired for a reason that was not misconduct conducted with his work. That was according.
Yeah, it looked from the outside, it looked political. That
right.
This was a political decision.
But
to
we
get
don't
rid
know
of him because he was.
That's the appearance. But what's the importance of that appearance to San Antonio and to other cities who are trying to take on Big Soda?
Well, it looks like cities can be bought. And that if you're trying to do a public health initiative in a city in which type 2 diabetes is an enormous problem and you have a population that doesn't have a lot of money and maybe doesn't have a lot of education and is drinking a lot of soda, you're going to have a hard time doing anything about that because the soda industry is going to come in and interfere with it and interfere with the democratic processes. You know, I don't know at what point we're going to start having government regulation of these kinds of things. I think when the health care costs get so unbearable, not only for the individuals involved, but also for the communities, then people are going to start looking for ways to create a healthier food environment, and getting rid of soft drinks is a really good way to start.
Right, and promoting alternatives to soft drinks, having plenty of water available, I just drop a tea bag in my water bottle, and I'm good to go all day on that. I don't need soda.
Yeah, I mean, I when people say that they like sodas and they don't want them taken away from them, I don't think you can look at those kinds of attitudes without looking at the extraordinary amount
right.
of marketing that the soda industry does to try to sell it.
Absolutely. Marion Nestle, I got to let you go. We're out of time. Marion Nestle, author of the book Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda and Winning.